everyone, welcome back. Rob here with the Snapcast, joined by Jerry and Abe.
Hello.
Hey, guys.
And today we're going to be discussing the turn. So we're going to be going through shuffling your deck, presenting your deck, which is just stuff we're, you know, just going to state. You're not going to see it here. And then we're going to discuss drawing your opening hand, going through a full turn. And during that time, we're going to be discussing different things like the stack, timing and priority, and then activated versus triggered abilities versus static abilities. And this is going to be very basic. Now, Jerry and I, we have two modern decks here. The program we're using is called Cockatrice. It is a free-to-use application online where you can play against multiple people and get practice with your deck. Now, when it comes to your other clients that you can play online, this is all on the players. You must know the rules of the game. Nothing will be automatic for you. It's not like Magic Online or Magic Arena, where when different effects get triggered, such as losing life, damage, all of that is kind of done for you after you've used the card. Here, you must manually change everything. I'm not as familiar with the program. Jerry, you use this program a lot to test.
Yeah, so great program for playtesting, great program for playing solitaire. Like, you can play a game with yourself to make sure a deck functions, that type of thing. I suggest people to use it when they actually know how to use, when they actually know the rules of the game.
So let's go ahead and go through our decks are represented here, the pile of 60. Whenever it comes for basic deck construction in most formats, it is a minimum 60 card deck. You may have more, but you cannot have less than 60 in your typical constructed Magic the Gathering. So we would shuffle our decks, Jerry, and you would want to make sure that it is sufficiently randomized. Don't try to do anything that could make it look like you're looking at where cards are going. Players have been caught for cheating for that. They've been very skilled in practice at trying to glance down and see, is it a land card or a non-land card? And they're able to manipulate cards to the top or to the bottom. These players are absolute scum. They have no place in Magic the Gathering, in my personal opinion. If you're going to cheat at a card game like this, go cheat at something else where you can make significantly more money. Don't ruin my good time when I'm trying to have fun with my hobby. So we would shuffle the deck, we would cut the deck, and then we're going to go and draw our opening hands. Now, how many cards do we draw for our opening hands?
Seven.
Okay. And I can do that just by double-clicking the top card, correct?
You can hit Control M and it'll automatically give you seven cards.
Oh, man, we're going to draw seven cards. And there we go. Now, the cards are very small on here. I apologize for that, but we can see the names of them. And we are sharing screen, so Jerry gets to see my entire hand. That's fine.
Oh, actually, I hit it, so I don't know what's in your hand.
What am I even doing with this deck right now? Things you want to be looking at with your opening hand. Are you able to cast spells with the land cards you have? Are you able to play a spell soon? Or are you going to have to wait a couple turns because your spell is an expensive spell? It has a high mana value. Here, most of my spells have low mana values. My creatures here, can I move that over? Yeah. These are my creatures in hand. They all cost one mana, but my land, if I was able to make it larger, which I'll go ahead, doesn't even matter if it goes on the field. My land cannot create a color of mana on its own right now. So I would have to do what's called a mulligan. Now, what a mulligan, and this is perfect because we get to talk about mulligans. A mulligan means you take your hand, you shuffle it back into your library, shuffle your library sufficiently, and then you draw a new hand of seven. Now, when you decide to keep your hand, you will choose one card, or however many times you have mulliganed, you will choose that number of cards and put them on the bottom of your library. Generally, the way this works is before you even draw your hand, you determine who goes first. How you determine who goes first is up to you and your opponent. You can play rock, paper, scissors. You can roll dice, do high roll, low roll, odds or evens. It's up to you. But it has to be a way between you and your opponent to agree upon how you're going to decide who goes first. Whoever goes first will make the decision to choose to keep their hand first. And Jerry right now is laying out the Magic the Gathering rock, paper, scissors in the form of rock, lobster, Paper Tiger, and Scissors Lizard. With this here, what you can do is shuffle the cards up face down, have your opponent choose a card for you and for them, and then you get to figure out, you know, who wins. You could assign number values, 1, 2, and 3, and roll dice to see who gets what. Again, it is up to you and your opponent to decide how you want to determine who goes first.
Now, just a quick interjection here. At most competitive events, rolling dice is the preferred method because it's seen as more random than selecting cards, which could be manipulated in some way. However, it's difficult, and they're, you know, having your opponent choose the cards typically negates that. But there are some people who are uncomfortable with that choice, so rolling dice is usually the way to go. And that's not a big deal, right? It's important that even though they are your opponent and your goal in this game of Magic the Gathering is to beat them, it's important to make sure that they're comfortable. And if they say, no, I don't want to play rock, paper, scissors, don't fight it. Don't be like, well, that's how I want to determine. It's just say, okay, well, let's roll dice then. And they say yes, and you say, okay, great. And you move on.
Yep.
Because there will be people who have particular ways of going about it. And then there are some people with the dice rolls, for example, who refuse to do a high roll. They only want to do a low roll. They only want to do closest to 7. You know, there are multiple ways. They want to do 3 dice instead of 2. Obviously, being accommodating is important. But if you ever feel that it is excessive and that your opponent is doing it not out of concern for true randomization, but they're doing it out of some sort of manipulation, or they're trying to cheat or to scum you in some way, don't hesitate to call a judge. The judges are your friends, and we'll discuss that later on in other episodes when we get further into rules. We'll discuss judges as well. But for the process of starting your turn, when you randomize who goes first, don't be afraid to, if your opponent isn't as accommodating as you are, don't be afraid to have somebody else get involved to help things get resolved. That goes with a lot of things in Magic, but this is a spot where there tends to be too much contention where there doesn't need to be.
Exactly. So I'm going to elect the mulligan here. Jerry is going to then decide what he wants to do with his hand.
I'm going to keep my 7.
Okay. This is a lot better for me to keep. And now I have to choose a card to put on the bottom. Now, already knowing what Jerry is playing, I have an idea of what I would like to put on the bottom. But you always, you know, want to, you're not going to have that information, right? You may be able to game. I know my opponent likes to play burn. I know my opponent likes to play, you know, big creature deck or control. And you can go about it that way. So from here, then, you can take a look and see what you have and move a card to the bottom.
The way to do that, Rob, is to right-click the card in your hand and then select the options from the card.
And there it has move to and bottom of the library. Excellent. So for this sake, Jerry, we're going to say you go first.
All right. First untap phase, I untap all permanents on the battlefield. None to be untapped. I'm going to shift to my upkeep phase. No effects occur here. Since I'm first, I do not draw a card in my draw phase. We skip that, and we go to my main phase 1.
Okay.
Let's see. Main phase 1. You can play 1 land per turn, unless cards say otherwise. This is a rule of the game. So I will play the land Inspiring Vantage. It enters the battlefield tapped unless I control 2 or fewer lands. Since I control 2 or fewer lands, it is untapped. I'm going to tap it, and I will produce a red, and I'll put it in my mana pool, and I will cast Goblin Guide for 1 red.
Ooh.
I'm going to put it on the stack.
Here. It's that boy.
It's that boy. Rob, does the Goblin Guide resolve?
Okay, and this is important. Right now, he is in the middle of casting a spell. Casting a spell has multiple parts. It can go very deep. Okay. We can go as far as saying you announce the spell, then you pay the mana, and then it goes into the casting phase. Pretty generic on that one, correct? So far?
That is the 100% super technical correct way to do it. You announce that you are casting the spell, you reveal the spell, you pay for the spell.
Correct. And generally what you'll see a lot of people do is they will add mana to their mana pool first, and then they will cast a spell, and all of that is happening at the same time. Very rarely do you need to get super deep into the weeds, as we just did, and there was only one deck that truly benefited from it, which we're not going to get into. So now the spell is on the stack. At this point, if I have any instants, and I have the ability to cast them, I may respond before this Goblin Guide enters the battlefield. During a turn, the active player, so the player whose turn it is, starts with priority at the beginning of every phase. So this was the first main phase. Jerry played a land. That cannot be responded to. Now when he tapped that land for mana, I also cannot respond to that. You cannot respond to a mana ability. He cast a spell. Now, I have the ability to do something. I can counter it. I can play a card that causes some action, as long as that card is at instant speed, or I have the ability to do casting at instant speed, because some spells or abilities let you cast at instant speed certain spells. In this instance, I do not. I have no mana. I have nothing in my hand to do so, and I would say it resolves.
All right. Goblin Guide enters the battlefield. At this point, I will move to my combat phase. Goblin Guide has haste. As Rob mentioned in the previous video, haste means that the creature, when it enters the battlefield, does not have summoning sickness. It can activate its abilities, and it can attack the turn it enters.
One thing real quick here. Before Jerry moves to his combat phase, priority would pass to me again.
Yep.
So now that Goblin Guide is on the battlefield, if I had a spell that could kill Goblin Guide, I could do that. But I don't have mana, nor do I have this spell. So before we even go to combat, he passes priority to the opponent, at which point I have no response. He moves to the start of combat.
All right, I would like to move to the start of combat. Rob said okay. I would like to declare attackers.
Okay, and before he declares attackers, I again get an opportunity to respond. I have no response. We move to the declare attackers step.
At this point, if we are in declare attackers, I must declare all of my attackers simultaneously. Nothing else happens here until the end of declare attackers. So I will declare my attacker Goblin Guide. A Goblin Guide has a triggered effect. The trigger would go on the stack. Whenever Goblin Guide attacks, defending player reveals the top of their library. If it's a land card, they put that card into their hand. So Rob.
Now, yep. Rob, Jerry.
Yep.
What is a triggered ability?
A triggered ability is an ability that occurs as a result of something else happening. All triggered abilities in Magic the Gathering have the clause in the very beginning of the phrase that says whenever, when, or if. So in this case with Goblin Guide, whenever Goblin Guide attacks, this is a triggered ability, so on and so forth.
That is correct. And that is different from an activated ability. An activated ability has a cost associated with it. Whether it is paying mana, sacrificing a creature, either of those, and it will generally have that cost on there.
And static abilities, the last ability. Static abilities are abilities that are always on.
So that
such as an enchantment on a creature.
Correct.
Anyways, you revealed the top card of your library. It is not a land. It goes back on top of your library. Move to blocks.
I have no creatures to block.
Okay. I would like to move to damage.
Once, and this is a key point here, once you go beyond the blocker phase, because I still have an opportunity to kill Goblin Guide if I had a spell or the mana to do so at this point and not take damage. Once you go to damage, though, damage happens in two portions. Jerry, go ahead and walk through damage.
Sure. The first portion is first strike damage. Creatures with the first strike or double strike ability deal damage here. It happens simultaneously, and no one can respond to it when you enter the phase. The next set of damage is the normal damage phase. Normal damage, all creatures with double strike and without first strike deal damage simultaneously as soon as they enter this phase.
In this instance, Jerry is attacking me directly with a two-power creature. I have no blockers. I take two damage.
Move to damage. You take two. So, there you go. End combat phase.
And so here, if you had any abilities at the end of combat, any instances, you may utilize those now, which none of us do. So then we move to the second main phase.
At this point, if I did not play a land in my first main phase, I could play a land here. And I could also cast other sorcery spells and creatures here if I had the mana to do so. But I do not, so I would like to move to my end phase.
Okay. Priority passes to me again. I have nothing I can do. We move to the end phase.
Okay. Rob, go ahead and click pass in the bottom left.
Okay. Well, hang on. There's let's talk about one more phase here, too. So you have your end phase.
Sure. The cleanup phase. Yep. I understand. The cleanup phase is a phase where nobody has a response to it. The only time you enter cleanup phase in every game, but the only time an action is taken in the cleanup phase is when a player's hand size exceeds their maximum hand size. So say I have seven cards. Let's say I have eight cards in my hand, but my maximum hand size is seven. When you move to cleanup, you have to discard down, meaning move a card from your hand to the graveyard so that you have seven cards in your hand. At this point, though, nobody can respond to anything. This happens.
Yep. And then the turn is passed. Most times at the end of the second main phase or even after combat, you may hear your opponent say, pass turn. That means they have nothing else to do in the second main phase. And they are saying, I am done with my actions. It is now your turn. At which point we click pass. It is now my untapped phase. So how do I move through phases on this, Jerry?
Just left click them.
Okay. So I have...
Now, Rob, before you start your turn, I want to jump in and just talk a little bit. We know how we've discussed Magic players having slang and jargon in their own language. There is also... a bunch of shortcuts that Magic players take throughout a game of Magic. And this is something that you will become familiar with as you play more Magic and as you learn more about the game itself. So one example of a shortcut, which in Magic is a term used kind of broadly because there are a bunch of different meanings to it. So in this instance, a shortcut can be taken on your turn. For example, at the first main phase, you play a land and you have nothing else to do for the rest of your turn. You have no cards you can cast, no actions you can take. And if your opponent does something, you have no responses to it. So it's your first main phase and you just tell your opponent, I'm passing the turn, pass turn. End of turn, however it's phrased. And that is implied that you are going from your first main phase all the way through every step through the rest of your turn and moving to your opponent's turn. That shortcut is just taking out all of those extraneous steps. And it happens relatively frequently because there are a lot of circumstances where you don't have any actions or your opponent doesn't have any actions. So even though it is your first main phase and there are 14 steps in total, you say pass turn and you skip right through all of them. Now, there might be circumstances where your opponent has some sort of an action and they say, hang on a moment, I would like to take an action during your second main phase or during your end step. They'll let you know, but that shortcut that you can take, it makes things a little easier for all players, and it's only useful if you know why you're doing it and your opponent knows why you're doing it. So new players, beware, but be aware as well.
And think about that too, the actions you want to do on your next turn or possibly during your opponent's turn constantly. So then you don't accidentally say, if they say pass turn, be like, okay, untap. Oh, wait, I wanted to. Sometimes your opponent will not let you go back in time. Another time where shortcuts could get tricky is this beginning phase and the untap, upkeep, draw phase. A lot of players will untap and then draw their card. But you may have wanted to do something before they drew. So be careful to communicate that and be prompt with that and loud. Like, don't scream at them, but don't be timid, like, oh, I wanted to act in your, be like, in your upkeep. And if you may, I mean, if you need to, you can like put your hand out like kind of a, like a stop motion with your hand, open palm and whatnot, like, in your upkeep, I want to do this or I want to do that.
Because yeah, and obviously this what we're talking about here is more applicable to a competitive setting where the rules are enforced very heavily and steps and phases are much more important, because if you miss one or you skip one or you forget one, it can have serious consequences in the game. However, if you are playing friendly Magic, if you're playing on your kitchen table, if you're just learning the game, these rule interactions may not be as serious, because your buddy, your pal, the person you're learning with, the person you're playing with, if you say, oh shoot, I wanted to do something during your upkeep, more than likely they're going to say, oh, okay, go ahead. I'm sorry, I drew my card too fast. But at a competitive event, they're going to say, I've already drawn my card. We've moved past the upkeep phase. You're no longer able to take an action.
Absolutely. Now, there are some phases where there is no priority. Okay. And reading the comprehensive rules will tell you that. So in this beginning phase, we have the untap step. And during the untap step, the first thing that happens is going to be phasing. We're not going to talk about phasing right now. Secondly, the active player determines which permanents they control will untap, and then you untap all of them simultaneously at once. There is no stack. There is no response. Your permanents untap. During the untap step, there is no priority, so no spells can be cast or resolve, and no abilities may be activated or resolve. Any ability that triggers during this step will be held until the next time a player would receive priority, which is the upkeep phase. So untap your permanents unless an ability prevents that permanent from being untapped. Then you go into the upkeep, and this is where actionable items can start to occur. I have nothing in my upkeep. I move to my draw phase. So I will draw my card, which we already knew what it was. It was that Blossoming Defense revealed by Goblin Guide. And now I move to my first main phase. I will play my land, and I'm going to play Breeding Pool, and I'm going to play it tapped. Jerry, is there a way to make Breeding Pool larger?
If you just put your mouse over the card, you'll see on the far right side of your screen, and then you can use the card there. You can also pull down the picture from the right-hand side, make it bigger.
I am not getting the larger card on the side. All right, so Breeding Pool states, when it enters the battlefield, you may pay 2 life. If you don't, it enters the battlefield tapped. A slang term for this is called a shock land. It gets its name from the spell shock, which is a 1-mana red spell that deals 2 damage. So I am going to elect to have this enter tapped. I will not receive 2 damage. And then this is where I'm going to shortcut it. This is my main phase. My land enter tapped. I can't cast spells. I pass the turn. So that passes me through the entire combat phase because there's no attackers for me to declare combat with. My second main phase, I cannot do anything. Go to my end step, and then I would pass the turn. And I need to click pass, correct, Jerry?
Nope, I click pass here.
Okay.
So I click pass. I go to my untap. I want to untap everything, so I will do that. Upkeep, I have no effects. Draw phase. Since this is my first turn not being player one, I get to draw a card. And I go to main phase one. I'm going to play my land for the turn. It's going to be Sacred Foundry. When it enters the battlefield, I may pay two life. If I do, it enters the battlefield untapped. I will pay the two life. I will generate a red, and I choose to activate the ability on my sorcery, Rift Bolt. I would like to suspend it, Rob. May I do this?
Well, so this is interesting here, Jerry. I cannot respond to a suspend.
Correct.
So suspend is an ability that you may pay an alternate cost on it, and then when it enters the battlefield, it will enter with a number of what is called time counters. And it will say what it is. Suspend 1, suspend 2, suspend, I don't know, Greater Gargadon was 9, I think, or 10?
10, yeah.
Okay. So it will tell you a number. And then it tells you what a time counter is, what happens when there's no more, when you remove them, and what happens. Jerry, explain what a time counter is and how suspend then will resolve.
So at the beginning of each upkeep, cards with time counters on them, you may remove a time counter from that. If the last time counter is removed from it, you may choose to cast that spell at that point.
Excellent. So that's it then.
Now, Jerry, Rob, I'm a little confused because Rift Bolt is a sorcery and we're in your upkeep casting Rift Bolt because it just came off of suspend. I thought you could only cast sorceries during your main phase one or your main phase two.
You are not wrong in that assumption. The difference here is that the card ruling on suspend supersedes the rule of the game.
So it's like we've talked about earlier, how on the card, even though there's a defined set of rules for the game, the card itself defines its own rule, and it essentially twists or breaks the rules of the game with its interaction.
Exactly.
Alrighty.
And then Rift Bolt is an exile at this point. It would not be on the battlefield. We just have it here to show the card because we really don't have an exile zone.
Correct. Well, even in paper, you wouldn't be able to put it in the exile zone because the exile zone has another stack of cards next to it. It's easier this way for the sake of making things palatable to understand. We both understand that Rift Bolt is currently sitting in exile.
Yes, with one time counter on.
Yep.
Now, this is one thing, another one of those things that we've talked about, how communicating with your opponent is so important. Like we talked about earlier about determining who plays first. So Rift Bolt, in this instance, like they said, is in the exile zone, but because it has counters on it, usually represented in paper magic by dice or some sort of a marker, it is difficult to put in your actual exile pile or exile zone because there could be other cards, and it's hard to make a stack of cards when one of them has dice on it. So when you place this card in exile with the time counters, it's important that you and your opponent both understand and come to an agreement that it is represented in the exile zone, even though it might not be placed in the exile pile with the rest of your cards in exile. It's an understanding. It is kind of a shortcut in a sense. And as long as you and your opponent both understand and both agree on where this card is being placed and how it's being represented, it's totally fine. And that's one thing that at competitive events, again, it is very important to keep track of. It's very important to do. But at casual events, if you're just playing with your friends, it's probably not as important. You know, it will be understood.
I will tap my Inspiring Vantage to make a red, and I will cast Goblin Guide.
Okay, so we would go through the same thing. I have no response for this, so as Goblin Guide is on the stack, I will say I have no response. It resolves, and now there are two goblin guides.
I would like to enter combat.
Okay.
I would like to declare attackers.
Okay.
Declare two goblin guides as my attackers. I have two triggers. These both are going to happen simultaneously. I can choose the order in which they resolve. Since they're both the same name, it really kind of doesn't matter. But we're going to resolve the first goblin guide. Rob, reveal the top card of your library.
And this is key because each one resolves that you reveal the top card. Just because there are two goblin guides does not mean I reveal two cards from the top of my library. You do it one at a time.
So reveal the top card.
Yep. Top card, all player, top one. Okay, it is a groundswell.
Okay. You may hide that card. Goblin guide attack again. You can just pull the card off the top.
Yep, so it'd be again reveal, and it again will stay on top. Now, if it was a land, I would put that land in my hand, just like Goblin Guide says, and then I would reveal the next card. In this case, it was a non-land, so it stays on top.
All right, move to blockers.
I have no blockers.
Move to damage.
I will take 4 damage. 2, 3, 4.
End combat. Second main phase, I have no effects. End phase.
And remember, all that combat damage happens at once. It's not I take 2 from one goblin guide, then I take 2 from another goblin guide. Once I enter damage, I am taking 4 damage. So now it is my turn. I have my untapped phase. I go to my upkeep. I have no actions in my upkeep. And I go to my draw. I draw that groundswell that we knew. And then I enter my first main phase. I will be playing another breeding pool. But in this case, I will be electing to pay 2 life so it enters the battlefield untapped. I'm going to add 1 green mana. And I'm going to cast Glistener Elf using that 1 green mana.
Glistener Elf resolves.
All right. Glistener Elf has resolved. Glistener Elf has summoning sickness. It does not have haste. So I cannot attack with it. You cannot attack or utilize a tap ability on a creature until your next turn. Or what is it? The next upkeep, correct?
Correct. Next upkeep.
It has to go through at least one upkeep.
One of your upkeeps, one of its controllers.
Yes, that is important to signify because in the game, there are effects that let you steal creatures. So you could take your opponent's creature. And if it has summoning sickness and you steal it, it will still have summoning sickness.
Correct. So now it cannot attack. I go to my second main phase. I will not do anything in my second main phase, and I will move to my end step.
All right. So I have no effects at the end of his turn, so I will elect to untap everything. Upkeep. I have a trigger here. I'm going to remove a time counter from Riftbolt. Can I do this, Rob?
Absolutely you can. In fact, you can even forget to do it if you so choose.
Nah, choose not to forget it. We're going to do this.
Now, if you do forget and you move past, sorry.
Oh, well. Sorry, yep. You got your next turn.
Exactly.
Now, again, that is one of the rules that is very heavily enforced at competitive events. But again, if you are just playing with your friends or casually, if you forget to take an action like removing a time counter from Riftbolt and you say, oh, crap, I forgot to take the counter off, more than likely they'll say, oh, yeah, go ahead. As long as it hasn't gone too far into the game, because sometimes you'll forget something and then a whole turn goes by and lots of actions have been taken. And then going back to the point of removing the time counter from Riftbolt becomes challenging because so many actions have been taken. But if you say, it's my turn, untap my cards, draw my card for the turn. Oh crap, I forgot my Rift Bolt. And your friend says, yeah, that's no problem. There's been no actions in the middle. Nothing has changed. More than likely, it's okay. At competitive events, it's a no-go. You have to maintain everything like we said. But for friendlies, go for it. The worst they can do is say no.
And there are different things you can do to remind yourself. One thing I'll do is I will put a die on top of my deck so that whenever I go to draw my card, that die is like, hey, I want you to do something before you draw a card. It's like, oh, that's right. Remove a counter from, say, in my instance, Search for Tomorrow, deck that I play. I would remove a time counter from it before I draw my card. So then I can still do that and then progress through the turn. So Jerry, in his upkeep, has removed his time counter.
I removed the last time counter from Riftbolt, so I will choose to cast it.
Okay.
Targeting Glistener Elf.
Okay. I can respond now. This is where we get to the stack. So Riftbolt is on the stack. Jerry, would you be able to move that onto the battlefield? Jerry is wanting to deal 3 damage to my Glistener Elf. So I'm going to respond. So I would say in response, I'm going to tap Breeding Pool for 1 green mana. And then I'm going to cast Blossoming Defense in an attempt to save Glistener Elf. Blossoming Defense gives target creature +2/+2. And it gains Hexproof until end of turn. Yep. Hexproof means it cannot be targeted by spells or abilities my opponent controls. So I'm hoping it's going to survive here.
Rob.
Yes.
Hexproof says it cannot be targeted by spells or abilities, but Riftbolt is already targeting your creature. So how does that work?
Hexproof fizzles the ability. Fizzling a spell is when a spell attempts to resolve where the game says it cannot. In this case, the creature has Hexproof before the Rift Bolt resolves. Therefore, the Rift Bolt cannot target the Glistener Elf, so it fizzles.
So there are 2 steps, 2 actions that it checks whenever you go to cast it. First, when you cast a spell, is it a legal target? At the time Rift Bolt was cast, my Glistener Elf was a legal target because it did not have Hexproof. The next time it gets checked is when that spell resolves. Is that still a legal target? If it is, the spell resolves, the damage is dealt. If it is no longer a legal target, or if a condition is no longer met, then that ability will fizzle. It will not occur, and then the spell is discarded, or like move to a graveyard, exile, whatever the rest of the action is for that spell.
All right. With Blossoming Defense on the stack still, I will respond. We'll make a red mana, and I will cast Lightning Bolt, targeting the Glistener Elf.
Okay. So now we have the stack. The first spell being cast here was Rift Bolt. The way the stack is going to resolve, though, is what was the last spell cast. So the last spell cast is Lightning Bolt, or the last ability activated, because abilities also go on the stack as well. In this case, I have no response. I cannot keep my Glistener Elf alive anymore. I cannot give it Hexproof again. So the Lightning Bolt is going to resolve, and it is going to deal 3 damage to my Glistener Elf. My Glistener Elf has a toughness of 1, and that Lightning Bolt will kill my Glistener Elf. So the Lightning Bolt resolves.
Okay. Lightning Bolt goes to my graveyard. Blossoming Defense has no legal target, so it fizzles and goes to the graveyard. Rift Bolt fizzles, goes to my graveyard.
And that is the stack. And that can be used for all activated abilities, all triggered abilities, and all spells, as long as you are casting in the legal phase that a spell could be cast, meaning sorceries generally can only be cast during main phases. A sorcery may not be cast in response to another sorcery or instant until that sorcery or instant resolves. You can only cast sorceries on your main phase unless an ability allows you to cast it at instant speed.
All right.
I think another important distinction here while we're talking about that, for example, with sorceries, is the easy way to explain it to a player is that a sorcery, obviously Rift Bolt we saw, is a unique circumstance because it's cast during the upkeep when the time counter comes off. But in a traditional sense, the sorcery during your main phase can only be cast when the stack is empty.
Ooh,
when
yes.
There are no other actions or items on the stack.
Yes.
That's the easiest way to take a look at it. So yes, it is your main phase, but there might be something already happening on the stack, which means you cannot cast a sorcery. You can only cast an instant or something else that can be responded with at instant speed.
And some triggered abilities or activated abilities can only be activated at sorcery speed. Make sure you read entirely what it is you want to do to understand when you can legally do it.
Most of the time, it will say on the card, this ability can only be activated as a sorcery. They're very clear about that. However, there are some that do not designate that. For example, planeswalkers. All planeswalker abilities, unless it states otherwise, can only be activated at sorcery speed, which means they can only be used during your first or second main phase, and they can only be used when the stack is empty. So you cannot activate a planeswalker's ability in response to your opponent doing something.
Correct.
All right. I move to my draw phase. Draw my one card. Move to my first main phase. I have nothing I want to do here. I would like to move to combat, Rob.
Yep, move to combat.
All right. I would like to declare attackers.
Declare attacks.
Two Goblin Guide triggers. Okay. Reveal the top card. Mutagenic Growth. All right. Then you would reveal the top card again. Mutagenic Growth.
Yep.
Move to blocks.
No blocks.
Move to damage.
And here I would take 4. And it's not looking good. I'm at 8 damage. No creatures on board. 8 life. No creatures on board. And my opponent is still at 18.
Yep. I will play in my second main phase here. I do elect to play a mountain because I have not played a land this turn. I will make 2 red mana. I will cast Eidolon of the Great Revel.
And this is where I would move to the one phase that is not mentioned in the comprehensive rules, and that is the scoop phase.
So now, this is another one of those lovely pieces of Magic the Gathering jargon or slang. The action of scooping or taking a scoop, moving to the scoop phase, etc., simply means to concede the game to your opponent. The term scoop comes from the action of scooping up all of your cards and leaving the game because you have been defeated.
Yep. Now, this was game one. Most games or matches are not best of three, but first to 2 wins. This is key, not best of 3, because it is possible to play a 4th game if 2 games end in a draw. Because it is possible for both you and your opponent to lose at the same time. So that is the turn. That is the stack, timing, priority, activated abilities, triggered abilities, and static abilities.
Go ahead, Rob.
I was going to say, again, if you have questions, please let us know in the comments, and we will answer them. And if you want to see another video or you want to see other interactions, we can definitely go through those.
So one of the easiest ways to remember how the stack works, because it is a very complicated step and it can get very cluttered when you and your opponent are both doing things, doing multiple things at the same time. You have to remember that this game was designed by math professor and a game designer, and the stack is essentially a computer code. So the easiest way to remember how the stack works is phylo, which is a term that means first in, last out. So whenever you create the stack, as you saw in our example, the easiest way to think about it is physically stacking the actions on top of each other. And whatever is the first one in, AKA the bottom of the stack, is going to be the last one out, because you have to get through everything that's on top of it in order to get to the bottom, which is the last one out. So first in, last out. And obviously this will get more natural over time as you get used to playing and you get used to using the stack and working on priorities and responding to instants and counter spells, et cetera, et cetera. But just that one little tip, Philo, often helps players keep the order when they're starting to play.
Absolutely. And I will say this is probably one of the more difficult aspects of Magic, is keeping track of the stack, especially like what Abe was saying, when you have a lot of spells going off. Because it's possible that if I would have had other spells in hand, I could have responded, we could have done more to protect, and a lot could have happened there. But I didn't. We ran out. Our stack was a short stack at only 3 cards. Jerry, what do you have to add?
No, I think we hit it all. Definitely were able to show off what we could do with the stack. We definitely hit up on triggered abilities and static abilities. As a matter of fact, let's go through one more turn of this current game, and we'll show you another instance of a triggered ability working.
Okay.
All right. So as people have gotten used to this, they probably got used to our phases. We can speed it up a little bit. I'll go to end phase. You go ahead and click pass. You choose to untap everything.
And
go ahead.
Yeah. Go to my upkeep.
No effects.
Go to my draw.
Yep.
And then go to my first main.
Yep.
At which point here, this is a very tricky point in the game, just because I'm losing on board, but I still have to try to play to win. So I will tap 2 mana to add a green and a blue, and then I will cast the spell Blighted Agent. So Blighted Agent is on the stack.
You casted a spell that costs 3 or less. This triggers my Eidolon of the Great Revel. You will take 2 damage.
Yep, and that is when...
casting that spell.
Yep, from casting the spell, before the spell even resolves, I will take 2 damage. And Blighted Agent then will resolve, enters the battlefield. It has summoning sickness since it does not have haste, so I cannot attack. I go to my second main phase. I do not have an additional land to play. I move to my end step.
And that was just a quick overview on trigger of additional triggers. He triggered the spell in this case on casting, or rather, he triggered the Eidolon because he casted a spell rather than me attacking. Triggers can happen anytime as long as the trigger's conditions are met.
Correct.
And as Jerry pointed out earlier in the episode, the way you can tell that it's a triggered ability and that it's going to happen is the card will read something along the lines of when or whenever or if. So, for example, Eidolon of the Great Revel says,
whenever a player casts a spell with converted mana cost 3 or less, Eidolon of the Great Revel deals 2 damage to that player.
So the very beginning of that is whenever. So that's how you can tell that it's a triggered ability. Whereas Goblin Guide, it is also a triggered ability, but it says when Goblin Guide attacks.
Yep.
So it's still the same concept. Condition has to be met in order for the ability to happen, but they are both considered triggered abilities.
Correct. All right, well, I think that is going to do it for us here in this episode. We hope you enjoyed the basic turn, seeing how to handle mulligans, the stack, timing priority, activated, triggered, and static abilities. Again, please let us know how we are doing. Your feedback means a lot to us. Check us out on all podcasting avenues, iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and just a plethora of other ones. Subscribe to us if you like it. That lets us know that, you know, we do have more and more listeners. And let us know what you want to hear about. We are open for topics. I'm constantly asking, what do people want to hear? Because sometimes we end up repeating like the same 10 topics and we don't know what you may want to hear.
And so, please, if you have any questions, this is an episode about a very complicated portion of the game of Magic. If you don't understand something or if something gives you trouble, please reach out to one of us. You can reach us on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. You can reach out to individual team members. We don't mind if you reach out and ask us questions about this. We'd be more than happy to answer your questions to help you out with stuff like this. It is literally the greatest thing we can do, is to help other Magic players grow.
Exactly. And You can find us on all those wonderful social media avenues. And we're going to be putting profiles up on our website, www.thesnapcast.com, where we post all of our podcasts. All of our content goes there, as well as on all the other avenues. And you'll be able to see all the different contact information we have for each of us, past and present members. But that's going to do it for us here. Thank you again, everyone. We hope you enjoyed this. And we'll be back with our next episode, where we're going to be getting more into archetypes, formats, how to build a deck, basic deck construction tips. What is set rotation? What does that mean? What does it pertain to? So those are all things that you have to look forward to next week. But that's going to do it for us here. Have a wonderful night.
Peace.